Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Today, we are thrilled to be joined by our co-host, the Right Honorable author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well and happy to be here.
Good. So in the world of climate, there are certain, I would call them brands or concepts or ideas that float around that have, to my mind, almost magical significance, right? And that magical significance is because they sound great. People don't entirely understand what's behind them, and so they're open to exploitation. For example, climate tax. Carbon tax. Everyone, price on carbon. Everybody loves the idea. The fossil fuel industries often pledge to support it, but then don't actually do anything. So they're kind of exploiting this concept. But there is value behind the idea of a carbon tax. If you look at like nuclear fusion power, you want to start a fight among climate people, start talking about nuclear power, right? But it's magic, limitless, clean energy, right? But until you drill in a little bit, you don't get the, you don't understand it. And that ambiguity allows people to, nefarious actors to exploit that uncertainty. I think the same thing is happening around hydrogen. It's one of these magic phrases you throw out. The hydrogen economy is going to save us all. We have a shiny new, Toyota fuel cell car that's going to drive us around. But hydrogen as a concept has been and can be exploited by the fossil fuel industry to delay action, even though there is a real legitimate valuable use of clean green hydrogen in the real world. So that's kind of the context in which we want to talk. We want to think about hydrogen beyond just the glossy surface and get down to some of the nuances. And for those of you who may not know, hydrogen is a atomic element. It's the simplest atomic element. It's a proton and an electron. Because it's so simple, it doesn't like to hang around on its own. Most of the time, you're going to see carbon in things like hydrocarbons, right, which is carbon and hydrogen, or water, which is oxygen and two hydrogens. You very rarely end up with just pure hydrogen gas, which is what we're talking about. Of course, that hydrogen, if you want to liberate that hydrogen from anything, you have to put in energy. And it turns out that the fossil fuels like methane can be used to create hydrogen, but then you get a byproduct, right? On the other side, there's this term that's thrown around in the industry of called cracking water. You take the H2O, right? The two hydrogens, you can put in enough electricity to get those two hydrogens off the water. And now you've got this pure hydrogen gas. Great. But this is the avenue where things get confusing. I mean, where does your hydrogen come from? So recently there's been a flurry of discussion about this because the bad guys are talking about hydrogen as, well, using it to further their own ends. There was a report put out in August of this year, August 2021, by a law firm, the Earth's Lawyer at Earth Justice, and it's called Reclaiming Hydrogen as a Renewable Fuel. And this is, to my mind, a very clear description of the issue. So I highly recommend people read it. We'll put it on the blog. But we are thrilled beyond measure to have with us one of the authors of that report who can tell us the real story. Sarah Gerson is a senior attorney at Earth Justice and is involved with the Right to Zero campaign, which covers a broad array of topics to get us off fossil fuels. So Sarah, welcome. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for talking to me this morning.
That's great. So Sarah, I gave that long and involved explanation. Tell me, did I get it more or less right? Do you agree with what I said? And furthermore, tell me, what should people know about hydrogen?
I think that you did a great job with the introduction. So thank you for setting up the topic. And I agree that one of the biggest misconceptions that we need to tackle from the very start when we start talking about hydrogen is the misconception that hydrogen equals clean. It doesn't. Because all of the hydrogen that we use today for industrial processes almost entirely comes from fossil fuels and is produced through very emissions intensive processes. Today, hydrogen production is responsible for even more climate pollution than the entire country of Germany. So if we are going to...
Sorry, just let me repeat that. You're saying that the emissions, the carbon dioxide that is emitted in producing the world's hydrogen today is more than the carbon dioxide emissions from Germany, right?
Yes, that's right. It sounds crazy, but it's true.
Wow.
And so if we're going to turn to hydrogen as part of a climate solution, one of the things we need to do is transform how we produce hydrogen, quit relying on fossil fuels, and instead turn to a new technology called green hydrogen, which uses 100% renewable energy to separate hydrogen from water molecules.
Sarah, can you clarify? So the reason that hydrogen, sort of the gray hydrogen, which I think we'll talk about the colors in a bit, but the gray hydrogen, the very intensive, highly intensive fossil fuel hydrogen production, that's because it takes so much fossil fuel energy. Is it to split the water? Is that, could you sort of walk us through sort of the different ways that the, you know, green hydrogen and gray hydrogen and blue hydrogen are produced?
Sure. So there's no splitting of water when you produce hydrogen from fossil fuels. Instead, you take fossil fuels, they're hydrocarbons. So the coal or the methane gas has hydrogen in it. And you strip the hydrogen off of those fossil fuel molecules in order to produce pure hydrogen gas. And doing that requires a lot of energy. And so you burn a lot of gas to power this process. And that emits a lot of health-harming pollution like NOx, carbon monoxide, particulate matter into nearby communities. And often, because the hydrogen production occurs near oil refineries, which are the biggest users of hydrogen in the United States, at least, this is an environmental justice problem because the exact same communities that are already overburdened by emissions from the oil refineries are also seeing emissions from hydrogen production. And of course, you know, that's the hydrogen production facility. Upstream of that, you have all the facilities that produce the fossil fuels, taking it out of the ground, process them, transport them. It's the entire life cycle of a fossil fuel that you have to contend with when you think about hydrogen production from fossil fuels.
Yeah, I think that to reinforce that point, I think, Sarah, the you're saying there's all the badness that comes from creating the methane gas, getting the methane gas. And I think one of the processes is called steam reforming, where they have the methane gas flowing in and they add to it steam, which somehow liberates the hydrogen from the methane. But I mean, all the energy that goes into making the steam, right, is also has to be counted in. So when you get down to it, you know, the current production of hydrogen is only concerned about producing hydrogen and they don't care how inefficient it is, right? And so there's all this bad stuff that happens upstream of the hydrogen production when you are making hydrogen from fossil fuels, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the industrial customers who want to buy hydrogen are interested in their bottom line. So if it's cheapest to produce hydrogen from fossil gas, that is what they will do.
Right. So tell me, there is there's a real uptick in the discussion of hydrogen in the last 2 or 3 months. There's various colors associated with hydrogen. Can you tell us what the, when people hear gray hydrogen, green hydrogen, blue hydrogen in particular is now a big thing, I think, right? What do they mean by that?
Well, I think there's a pretty common consensus that gray hydrogen means producing hydrogen from fossil gas, from methane. There's also a pretty clear consensus that blue hydrogen is the term for taking a gray hydrogen facility and slapping on a carbon capture and sequestration device so that you capture some portion of the carbon dioxide from the smokestack and bury that somewhere. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of questions about how this could work in practice because it's not something that has a track record at hydrogen production facilities.
So that's an interesting point. The blue hydrogen, where they use this, it's the gray hydrogen process that emits a lot of CO2, but they magically capture the CO2 and put it someplace safe, right? That's where the blue, I mean, do any plants like that exist? Or is this just a conjectural proposal that we could make hydrogen, I hesitate to say blue because I'm sure that's an industry buzzword they've created, right? They're trying to find some nice way to talk about this. But this type of hydrogen, is it being done anywhere that you know of? I mean, is there a plant that's actually running that way?
I believe the answer is no. There are a couple of carbon capture facilities that are attached to other like power generation facilities that burn methane gas. But I don't believe there's anything operational right now when it comes to hydrogen.
I think you go the other way. It's clearly not a dominant process. This magic blue hydrogen process is not everywhere. It's not, as you say, it is yet to be really fully developed. And all the questions about carbon capture from the smokestack are relevant, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, it's definitely an understatement to say it's not the dominant process. It's not happening yet. It would take an enormous investment to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is a little bit disturbing is that there will be some independent analysts who see a role for blue hydrogen in the clean energy future. But when people who are not on the payroll of the fossil fuel industry think about, okay, what could blue hydrogen possibly look like in a world that makes sense? What they say is, all right, we need to get best in class leakage prevention at every stage of the natural gas production system, which has not been demonstrated in the United States. We are operating a very leaky system. And they will also say, oh, you know, this steam methane reformation process that, as you mentioned, is the current dominant technology for producing gray hydrogen, that will need to go too. We would need to transition to a different technology for producing hydrogen from gas called thermal conversion, because it's a lot easier to capture carbon from that. So then we would actually potentially be able to achieve over 90% capture rates. And so even in the best case, for someone who is really sympathetic to somehow using fossil fuels to make hydrogen in the future, you would need to completely transform how you're producing hydrogen. And that is completely inconsistent with the hype you hear from the fossil fuel industry, where they say, oh, you know, we have all of this existing infrastructure. Wouldn't it be great to take advantage of it? We can just, you know, invest even more money in our current infrastructure, and we will be able to, you know, be producing blue hydrogen quicker than you can get green hydrogen production up and running. But it's like, wait a minute, how are you claiming that you have a first mover advantage if the stuff that you've already got in the ground that you think is going to be a bridge fuel relies on, you know, using your leaky gas production and your very dirty and hard to capture steam methane reformation processes?
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, so it sounds like, okay, so maybe there's a small argument that blue hydrogen is better than gray hydrogen, but it's still very much a wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, certainly there's a lot of concern around carbon capture and storage and whether that's actually a safe, you know, sort of long-term viable option, especially the way that I would imagine they're doing it. So this green hydrogen, is this actually, you know, a better option? Is this like a sort of something that you see as being potentially viable in a world where we're trying to reduce climate change?
So first, before I answer your question, you mentioned like the theoretical possibility that blue hydrogen could be better. Before I stop talking about blue hydrogen, I need to point out recent analysis that came out after we finished drafting our report from professors who work at Cornell and Stanford that showed that if you were going to produce blue hydrogen using existing technology and current leakage rates, it's actually worse than just burning natural gas. Because like Ted mentioned, there are energy losses in transforming energy, your fuel carrier from methane to hydrogen. And then if you put carbon capture on that, you just require even more energy and more fossil fuel extraction to fuel the very emissions and energy intensive carbon capture process.
So, sorry, but let me ask this question. What is in it for the fossil fuel industry to promote this, as Mariah said, this sheep in wolf's clothing, that this sort of, it's not quite a sham process, it's theoretically possible, but when you look at it, it's clearly not a good thing. Why, what's it, and I guess I'll answer my own question, tell me if I'm wrong. If the blue hydrogen stuff works, then the fossil fuel companies stay in business. They keep fracking, they keep getting the methane out of the ground, and they keep all their facilities and they keep selling it, right? It's a lifeline for them to stay alive. Is that the idea?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a new source of demand for their products, and it's a story that they can tell about why their business should continue to exist.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah. Those guys.
I've seen some hydrogen sort of energy companies touting hydrogen energy as zero emissions, and I can't. How can they even say that? Right? I mean, it's not zero emissions, is it? Maybe it's zero emissions when you're using it. Is that the sort of way they get away with saying zero emissions?
So, It depends. I would have to see what I would have to have more information about the company that is making that claim, because if it is a company that produces green hydrogen, it's true that you can produce green hydrogen with zero emissions. The way you do that is by using renewable electricity from solar and wind or other renewable power generation, and take that zero emission electricity to split hydrogen from water. Once you have this green hydrogen, you raise the great point. Well, okay, can we use it without creating emissions? And there are, in fact, some ways to use hydrogen that does not pollute. If you put that hydrogen in a fuel cell, that fuel cell can give you backup power or power a truck with zero tailpipe emissions. However, if you're burning the hydrogen,
Hindenburg style, right?
Well, even in a controlled manner, hydrogen burns incredibly hot. And so this hot flame produces a lot of NOx emissions, even more so than burning something like a fossil methane gas, which also creates NOx. But the movement to a gas with a higher flame temperature creates the threat of increasing NOx emissions.
And Sarah, you said fuel cell, right? Which may set off bells in people's heads. A fuel cell is this little, it's almost like a battery, right? You put hydrogen in one side and you get an electric flow, you get electricity out of it. It's a remarkable thing, but it's a device that is immature, right? There are some that exist, but it's something you could build and use hydrogen. And the other thing is that NOx is actually nitrogen oxide, right? So it's spelled NOx because you have N for nitrogen, O for oxygen, a little X underneath it because you can have multiple, but that's the famous NOx, which struck me. It's like, if you are old fashioned burning hydrogen, you know, in your internal combustion engine, you're still making pollution, which you got to be careful of, right? It's not carbon dioxide, but it's NOx, which are not good for people. So, man, there's a, the green hydrogen. So we've got gray hydrogen, there's blue hydrogen peeking out from behind a rock somewhere saying, you know, and then you have green hydrogen. So the green hydrogen this is the virtuous one, right? We want the green hydrogen, which is made entirely taking electricity from, say, a wind turbine, putting that electricity into water, and out pops the hydrogen and some oxygen, which we all like, right? We all like the oxygen, and we collect the hydrogen, and that's the best use, right?
Yes, that's right.
Wow. So we have... Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong. What we've talked about is that there are several different kinds of methods of preparation, ways to produce this hydrogen gas, which, and of the various methods, two of the three we talked about are basically produce a lot of carbon dioxide, global warming gases, right? One, the blue and the gray, generally speaking, are bad. The green hydrogen is good. We have those production. We've seen that the fossil fuel industry is taking advantage of people's lack of knowledge of the distinction between these different colored. Of course, they're not colored hydrogen, right? The hydrogen doesn't have any color, but I mean, these sort of process descriptions, the fossil fuel people are taking advantage of that, right? And that's what the smart climate activist needs to be aware of. Like when they see an ad on MSNBC touting how wonderful hydrogen is, they say, yeah, okay, where'd that hydrogen come from, right? Is that the kind of thing that people should be thinking, Sarah?
Yeah, I think that should be the first question. Where are you getting that hydrogen?
Super, super.
And then I think just to add a point too, you know, Ted, at one point you said sort of it, this green hydrogen is what we all want, but I think it's important to clarify, we all want it for certain uses, right? It is not the go-to fuel. The goal, I would imagine we would all three of us would have probably agreed that the go-to fuel is going to be wind, water, solar kind of stuff, right? But there's a place for green hydrogen in a limited capacity. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's a very important point. And there are several reasons for that. First is that green hydrogen, although it relies on technology that exists today, and that has existed for, you know, more than a century, you can go back and see really cute, grainy, black and white silent movies of scientists at GE doing electrolysis, if you look for them on YouTube, about 100 years ago. But, you know, despite the fact that this is well understood science, the scale is not here. The supply is not here. And even after we scale up our production of green hydrogen, it is always going to be more expensive and resource intensive to, you know, use wind and solar to create hydrogen than to just use the wind and solar in the first place to power your device. And we already have the technology to do that in some of our most emissions intensive sectors. So we want policymakers to be focused on going full bore, deploying the solutions that are ready to scale today, getting that wind and solar in the ground, and deploying the electric vehicles and clean electric appliances in our homes and businesses to take advantage of that renewable energy.
Sarah, that's a great segue. What I'd like to do is to invite you back to have a discussion about those applications, because I think that is, of and by itself, a really interesting talk. Once you've got in your head that there's these different classes of hydrogen, you want to make sure you know where your hydrogen came from, then the question is, what are you going to do with it? So can you come back for another show and talk to us about that?
I'd love to.
Great, great, great. So look, what we'll do is we'll put it down here. We will. Oh, so Sarah, tell me, if someone wanted to learn more about get to your report, we of course will put it in the show links. But what would they go look for online? I mean, does Earth Justice have a website they should go to?
Yes, we've got the report on the Earth Justice website, and
it's called "Reclaiming Hydrogen for Renewable Energy." And the website is earthjustice.org, right? Earthjusticeoneword.org?
Yes, that's the Earth Justice homepage from right. There. Hopefully, it'll be easy to find. And there's so much more detail. We have some charts that we're really proud of. So hopefully people can dig in.
Super, yeah, super.
It's a fascinating report. It's really well put together. Kudos to you.
We will put up a link to that report on the blog. It's at the blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have questions about this show, suggestions of things we ought to talk about, please send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. All one word, massclimateaction.net. Let us know what you think we ought to be talking about. You're probably listening to this on your smartphone right now using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their smartphone using their favorite modern podcast distribution app. We're everywhere nowadays. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects disadvantaged communities in order to safeguard our collective future. So Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time. I look forward to chatting again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.